Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. My name is Pat Flynn. I normally host the Philosophy for the People podcast, but today I am teaming up with Mind Matters to talk once again with Dr. Selmer Brynjord on all things related to AI, consciousness, rationality. Dr. Brynjord has done a lot of really fascinating work on this front. If you missed our previous episode, I'm going to encourage everybody to check that out because we discussed in some depth one of my favorite arguments for the immateriality of the intellect, the seeds of which go back at least to Aristotle, but were further developed by one of my favorite philosophers, James Ross, and then Dr. Brynjord has furthered that conversation as well. So it was one of my favorite conversations. I want to make sure that nobody misses that. But here we are for a continued conversation. So Dr. Brynjord, it is great to be back with you again. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and it's on my end great to be back too. I did enjoy that very much, that prior interaction on that topic.
So for people who may have missed that, if you wouldn't mind, let's just start with some of the usual preliminaries. Who is Dr. Brynjord? What do you do, and how did you get into all this business concerning AI and the nature of consciousness?
Sure. Well, I'm fresh from a grad student dinner last night where I was asked to understandably, in fact, predictably and almost obligatory, asked to recount my career to the point of last night in broad strokes, obviously, so that perhaps it could provide some guidance. And summing it up, I'd say I've never failed to be interested in the mind and cognition, and probably the same time, logic. And that got really, really intense in high school in my Spanish class when the unforgettable Mr. Ruyak introduced me to, well, it'll be A, B, C, D, and we'll have to cut it off or we'll run out of time, but introduced me to the comical but yet penetrating logic in Don Quixote, the first novel, as far as we know, where things like in the modern era, the Princess Bride type puzzles in that movie, which I'm sure many of your listeners will have seen, there are these opportunities to ask a key question so that you can deduce what's the safe track ahead. And so he introduced me to that. And then I became more and more interested. And he said, you know, you can actually study this stuff when you leave my class. And I don't mean just high school. So he was referring, of course, to college, and he had a former student come in who was majoring in philosophy, and that was really quite something for me. And so I decided I wanted to do that, but really I felt that the best thing to do would be to use logic in law, so that I'd wanted to be a trial lawyer. Loved debate, still do. I don't think a day goes by when I'm not debating, and I always win the debates I'm in.
Oh, naturally, of course, yeah.
Of course, thank you. but then I pulled a fast one on my mother when she came to Penn to visit one time, and I said, Mom, I'm sorry, no law school. I'm going to get a PhD in philosophy and go on and continue to study logic and philosophy of religion, and put those two things together. And she was just flabbergasted. But it wore off after about 30 minutes, she said, which was par for the course, thankfully, for her. If that's what you want to do, more power to you. And so that's what I did. And then when I got to Brown University, my advisor, Roderick Chisholm, compressing greatly here, said, oh, you crazy guy, you're not going to get a job if you are doing pure logic and pure logic in the realm as well of philosophy of religion. You'll never do that. So our conversations quickly ended up with AI because I said, well, hey, I was really interested in computation actually at Penn. And he said, well, now we might be getting closer. And then I said, well, I'll put it in the hopper. And the next conversation I came back, I said, well, what about this AI thing? So this is 82. This is just about the time when people in AI were saying the counterpart of what some are saying today, which was that, oh, this hot stuff everybody is excited about, which was expert systems, is just going to replace every expert on planet Earth who's a human. So yeah. He said, good, go for it. Start studying. And I did. And I think, really, I'm a very boring person. I've never been far from logic, and cognition and computation for as long as I can remember, really.
Yeah, well, that's super, because you've been in this conversation, you've been in this debate for a long time. And today we're going to speak specifically about something called integrated information theory. But before we get to that, I just, you know, for somebody who's been involved in these conversations and thinking about AI for as long as you have, maybe this will be an interesting question to start with. What did you, from your understanding of AI and its inherent limitations back at the beginning up until now, were there any predictions you had originally concerning the limits of AI that have turned out to be correct? Were there any predictions that you had originally that turned out to be incorrect? And then now, from where you stand, I'd be curious to hear, Dr. Brinjord, of what your current predictions are with your understanding of AI, if there even are any measurable predictions. I think this is something interesting. I think it's also something important to have. And I think it's an area where good philosophical thought about the nature of consciousness, rationality, formal thinking, and what AI is can help us avoid having a certain amount of egg on one's face, right? Because there have been many predictions made by people who are a bit skeptical of AI that were very false, right? You'll never pass the Turing test or something like that, right? So you probably see what I'm getting at. I'd just be curious to hear your thoughts on all of that.
Yeah, it's a great question, at least for me. I don't think any of my predictions have turned out to be false. The darker predictions aren't yet fully true, but I think the empirical evidence for them is becoming close to overwhelming. So on the darker side first, there's coming a time when over a given finite interval, so I discuss this at length in my first book, What Robots Can and Can't Be, over a finite interval of time, and putting anybody in the judge's seat, sort of like the Turing test, armed with state-of-the-art technology to unmask, today we would call these things mostly deep fakes.
Yes.
So that book is a defense of two propositions. We're heading toward a time when Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner movie, and that kind of detective work is actually a well-defined career. I see that starting to happen, believe it or not, in my own case, which is really ironic. I never had that thought, but we're now needing to unmask these deep fakes.
Yes.
We're now needing to have something better than CAPTCHA, et cetera. So we're heading toward a time when over a finite interval of time, we're not going to be able to tell the difference between a human person and the appearance on the spot, or, you know, it could be through video, of an AI. An android or robot. You're just not going to be able to tell the difference. And people are starting to get worked up about this, right? And it's still easy to tell the difference. And people are still worked up about it. And I think I don't like the fact that they're worked up about it. I think 5 minutes with a search engine, going back to some ground truth, you'll be all set. It's a matter of a lot of laziness perhaps today. But it is starting to happen.
And it is alarming, isn't it? I mean, deep fakes have always been around, but they sort of face certain technological hurdles, right? But now those technological hurdles are being overcome. That seems absolutely right to me, and it is concerning, yeah.
Right. And gradually overcome. We're slipping and sliding into this period of time. But if the judge is an expert... So I don't think the Turing test has been passed or anything close at this point, because I allow for putting experts in the judge's seat, and I can unmask a deep neural network, as can many, or a predominantly deep neural network like a chatbot of today in a few minutes. But this time is coming, yet if you turn to infinitary, anything involving any systematic reasoning involving the infinite is still utterly and totally out of the question for an AI. So, I mean, an AI can reason over some logical and mathematical content up to a point. It's generally exactly the same point as was issued as a challenge 4 decades ago by two generations younger than the original generation of logic-based AI folks, right? So they were saying, I'll give you a sentence, a single sentence in English, you show me how that's going to work in an artificial neural network. And if you say, well, we'll put the data in for it, fine. I still get to ask my follow-up questions about what follows from what I tell you. So if I tell you everyone likes anyone who likes someone who likes at least four dogs, good luck. No way. Very little data on that. Minuscule amounts of data. A deep neural network cannot reason over that. But mathematicians and logicians, again, it's a bit esoteric, but I made the prediction this is an insuperable barrier. By the way, that example is a modification of one from the great cognitive scientist of reasoning, Philip Johnson Laird. You know, that prediction that infinitary reasoning will be one that AI strike out on holds true. The prediction that, which is in the same book, that actually beliefs that are layered in terms of things like believing, knowing, intending, desiring, communicating. So, you know, if I say Austin believes that Selmer believes that Pat is talking to Selmer, that's actually true. And we know instantly that that's true.
Yeah.
But that is really right now, and humans have to sort this out to read even a basic detective novel.
Right.
Okay. Because, yeah. So believe it or not, and I could amplify that. But that's still, there's a chapter on that kind of thing. We're nowhere. I just saw a test by my close colleague on the consciousness front as well, Naveen Sundar Govindarajulu, last night. I told my wife about it this morning. I said, you wouldn't believe the test the test is ingenious, but you also wouldn't believe the results of Naveen applying the test to state-of-the-art systems like, in the case of OpenAI / Microsoft, O1 preview. It's completely unable to figure out how to put together a plan to affect another agent's mental states. If there's any layering, so the other thing about, I'm still sticking with echoing John Searle. I'm still sticking with the prediction that these machines understand nothing. And you could view a lot of these failures as directly in line with the implicit prediction that Searle has his issues and his problems, and he's certainly not to be across the board venerated, even in just intellectually speaking. But by golly, he was right 100% about this.
Yeah.
If anything is just manipulating symbols with no understanding, it's got to be an artificial neural network in any form, because ultimately the data is just numbers swimming through time. So lack of understanding.
Yep.
Is we still have it. We know we have it. The one thing I would say that does certainly surprises me is that we let ourselves get to this point in terms of what's sometimes called hallucinations on the part of these systems. I never saw this coming, because my focus was really on the question, could an AI be premeditatedly and ingeniously deceptive? And that's still a serious interest of mine. I have a recent paper with Micah Clark, a former student and now AI scientist specializing on autonomy, about that. And we look at that issue. But this hallucination thing, we all know why it's happening in general, right? So, but that we let ourselves get to this point in the human race that, look at what happened. If you're not aware, you listen to say, when there was a German group of scientists started using an LLM to write some papers on the very topic that they were experts on. Yeah, it would generate a paper almost instantly, replete with nice abstract formatting, the references, list of references. And then they were like, there's only one small problem. We looked at the reference list, and some of the wonderful things that we wrote according to the reference list, we actually didn't write.
They don't exist. Yeah.
Right. They right. don't exist. And, right. and so, I mean, they were justifiably, you know, flabbergasted. And yet we still have these systems out there. I think we've started to realize we've got to compartmentalize them to some degree so that they're operating in domains that are not, quote, mission critical or serious. But even there, I'm not sure we've clamped down as we rationally should. So I did not, I mean, if you, I had no idea that was going to happen.
Yeah. Okay. That's really helpful. And one more question on this before we start to talk about integrated information theory is, yeah, I'd be curious where you think the line is between certain arguments that give us an unprincipled reason to see that AI is really not a thinking thing, and whether or not those give us clear predictions, right, or certain limits that we can expect. So maybe it'll be helpful if we just go back to James Ross's argument for an example, right? So Ross's argument, and people can listen to our previous conversation for the support of this, is something like this, right? He'll claim that at least all formal thinking is determinate, like logical thought and mathematical thought, but no physical process is determinate. So, you know, Ross argues that no formal thinking is a physical process, right? And we supported all that in the previous episode, and there's actually a considerable number of papers out there right now. I think that's a really good argument. In fact, I think it's the closest thing to a demonstration, right? And like that, to use a traditional sort of scholastic term in philosophy, on the scene, it totally convinces me. But does that set certain expectations, however, Dr. Bringer, at least that particular argument of, because for me, it's always been a little bit fuzzy thinking about that. Like, okay, I think that that's definitely true. AI is not a thinking thing, an impressive, we might even want to say like magic trick in some respects. But coming at it from that angle doesn't give me a totally clear idea of exactly where I think the lines will be drawn and what I can actually expect these systems to be capable of. Does that make sense?
Oh, more than makes sense. It's a great question. I'll try to channel, so to speak, Ross. I didn't get my PhD under him. He got his PhD under my advisor, but I think he would answer your question with a yes. And then the follow-up would be, okay, well, then what? What should we expect, and has it arrived? I think he would say, well, why don't you test it with some pretty taxing challenges, the right answer to which and the justification for the right answer center around determinate and maybe to some, maybe it's fair to say maximally determinate reasoning. Mm-hmm. If the problem does require precision at this high level, and if to verify it so that we know what you just said in terms of an argument or a proof, because again, as we, I think, discussed, just like there are programs, computer programs, that are still programs, even though they're invalid, mm-hmm. There are proofs that people produce, actually more than anybody would, I think, like to admit,
yeah,
that are invalid. So mm-hmm. in the case of what I'm saying is the expectation, and we also need to verify it, and we can't. So we would expect that this would be minimally extremely tough through the 21st century,
yeah,
for really any AI that is not engineered, that is not based essentially on the science that Ross, I mean, yes, it's a philosophical argument. You said it's as close to a demonstration as you can get in the area, I think, of philosophy, mind, etc. I'm with you 100%. I mean, the thing about it that's amazing is when he says determinate, precise, rigorous, formal reasoning, we start helping him out with some synonyms. Like, we've got that in there. We've got the first specimens of that in Aristotle. I mean, this is something, yes, right? This is something the human, if anything in human intellectual commerce, if you will, has been going on so long that we should know what we're doing, it is that, okay? And goodness gracious, these machines are horrible at it unless, as an as a scientist or engineer in AI, you give them a token of the very thing that Ross is talking about. So, you know, good old fashioned modus tollens.
Yeah.
You know, if P then Q, not Q, well then therefore not P. Well, you can give them modus tollens, but you have to program it in. Then they do wonderful things. You're just giving them a token of that. So you're not giving them literally modus tollens.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. we've got that. We understand that because we know we can actually change the code, change the system, change the way it's tokenized, change the way it's encoded, if you will. So you would expect, based on Ross's argument, to see what we currently see with systems that are not explicitly and carefully engineered to conform to the structures, the abstract structures that he's talking about. And now, will you be able to show up and knock on the door at OpenAI and say, hey, I want to come in because I want to show you basically why your neural network-based processing has no chance of doing careful, rigorous reasoning in a verifiable form? Yeah, they might not let you in. If they let you in, I don't know if they'll let you hang out at the whiteboard all that long. But if it was Ross, he'd be done in 2 minutes on the whiteboard. And if there were honest people in the audience there, and they weren't aware of this, this being Ross's reasoning and original argument, which you know, we tried to extend, I think they'd say, "Uh-oh!" In their heart of hearts, they'd be like, "Uh-oh, gosh, I never saw this before. This does so." That would be an expectation, I think, and yeah. it has turned out to materialize.
Yeah, that's great, Dr. Brinjer. Thanks for entertaining me on that front. And I think the general question of, well, what should we expect given our positions? What predictions does our position make? I think that's an important question. And I think that you've given us some reason to see that for some time, these predictions have not always been optimistic, but they have been fruitful, right? And I'm with you on some of the darker, more concerning sides. So let us pause the episode here. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we are going to begin taking a look at integrated information theory and whether that can adequately explain consciousness. We will see all of you then.
This has been Mind Matters News. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.